Hello and welcome to Culture. Robert Bound is off this week, so today you've got me, Tom Edwards, manning the helm until he returns. Today it's time for this month's edition of Something Old, Something New, where we invite in duos, double acts, siblings, friends to come and talk about the things that have interested and inspired them. Our guests this time hail from the world of books. Charmaine Lovegrove is literary editor for Elle magazine and co-founder of Dialogue Scouting and is about to launch her own imprint of Little Brown Publishers called Dialogue. More of that in a moment. Elizabeth Day is a journalist, an author, and the name behind titles such as the award-winning Home Fires and Paradise City. Her new book, The Party, is due to hit shelves this summer. So what piques the interest of these literary minds? We're about to find out on Culture with me, Tom Edwards. Charmaine and Elizabeth, welcome to the programme. Good to have you both with us, of course. We always invite in people who know one another on the programme. You're, of course, both from the literary world, as we've been hearing, but how did your paths first cross? Elizabeth, to you.
I mean, it's one of my favourite stories. It's like a platonic love affair. We were both invited to an Elle magazine dinner, which ludicrously was for tastemakers. I don't know why I got in. And I was sitting on the opposite side of the table from Charmaine, and we were being asked our opinions on what was going to shape future taste. And I sort of caught Charmaine's eye quite early on and thought, she looks really interesting. I really like the cut of her jib. And then at one point, we were talking about Beyoncé Lemonade, which had just come out. So that dates the dinner a bit. And everyone was like, it's amazing. It's incredible. And then one guy at the end of the table, I think he was the only man at the dinner, wasn't
he? Yeah, and he was feeling it. He was feeling it. Probably a bit like you right now, being the only man at the table.
It is. You know. It's a special feeling.
This guy stood up and had the temerity to say that Beyoncé wasn't all that because she didn't really write her own songs and she's kind of commercial and sold out a bit. And Charmaine...
Antagonistic.
I mean, oh my God. Charmaine then just delivered the most eloquent, impassioned, brilliant, intelligent defence of Beyoncé and Lemonade from a seated position. And everyone was sent into... a wow of silence is how I describe it. And I was like, I need to know this woman. I need to know her. And then I basically went round, as soon as the dinner was ended, I went round to her side and fangirled.
It was really awesome. And, you know, I had actually read I've read everything she's ever written. And so I was already fangirling. And, you know, I think I've said on this programme before that books about London are really difficult to write and to really get the kind of the context and the texture and all of the kind of nuances of the city. And so Paradise City, which is Elizabeth's third novel, I think that does that in an incredible way. And so I was already a fan. So when she came over, I was like, I've read everything that you've ever written, including your Theresa May interview. Oh. And, or, you know, she's just an incredible journalist and a very, very accomplished novelist. And so, yeah, we had, you know, me just being a bit outspoken on the rights of Beyoncé. And, you know, what was really funny about this guy is, I have to say, was it wasn't that he didn't like Beyoncé. He also was trying to school me on black activism hip-hop, and I was like, yo, I am a black girl from South London, like, I am Jamaican, like, are you really... He was like, you know, perhaps you need to listen to Kendrick Lamar. And so do you remember that?
Yes.
And it was just like,
I need to know, I imagine he's probably left the country,
or... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what
listening.
Has happened.
Yeah, and he may recognise this and
he
think,
might, yeah, and I think he needs to think. So basically, I was mansplained race at a dinner on tastes and trends. And so what's on trend absolutely is us women of colour fighting back and saying, can't do that, yo.
I remember Charmaine, she prefaced her incredibly eloquent defence of Beyoncé with, with all due respect.
Oh, you know it's going to be a takedown.
She's like, it's ironic that the only man in this room who is also a gay white man who works in fashion should say this about Beyoncé. And it was just incredible. And then you...
And then we just became friends, you know, from that moment in. And I read The Party. I loved The Party. I love The Party. I think it is, again, you know, Elizabeth has a way with words where she's able to get into a culture and display it to us. And then she has all these twists and turns, as all good novels should have. And, you know, we really are invited to the party in this book. So I read it. I loved it. And then I, as you know, I work in film and television. television, and that I work with my clients to find books that I think should be on television and film. And this is one of the books. And so, yes, one of my clients has now optioned that book, and Elizabeth is working on it with them.
What a great story from beginning to end.
And I just want to say quickly that Charmaine is a force of nature and an incredibly impassioned, eloquent advocate of the power of literature. And I describe her completely unironically as my guardian angel. Having met Charmaine was such an incredible twist of serendipity, and my books have never been optioned before for TV or film, and this is just like such an exciting journey, and it's all because of her.
So well, it's actually because of you writing it.
Love you.
Everyone is being too nice to each other.
I know, much love.
We need to move on with the programme.
We could just do a programme just about how much we love each other, but we won't.
Do. I think there's a weekend newspaper column that sort of goes in this territory, but they don't do it with this kind of elan.
So. Well, maybe we need to do that. Maybe that's our next commission.
It'll be on it. Okay, we'll write a note to ourselves.
Yes.
Okay, well, something old, something new. This is what we're talking about today. Charmaine, let's start with you. So, something old.
So, my something old is a bookshelf. Well, it's a bookcase from Foyles. So Foyles was my favourite bookshop as a child, other than Bolingbroke Bookshop, which is in Battersea, which is where I'm from. And Foyles was, 25 minutes from my house, from Clapham Junction, to get to Tottenham Court Road. You know, it's always held like a very magical place in my heart, because I would go there and get lost for hours when I was supposed to be elsewhere and probably at a birthday party or something. But on Saturdays when I was a child, and, when I was sort of 9, 10, I actually started going to Foyles by myself.
And lost is the operative word, because for some of our international listeners might not know, this was a more esoteric bookshop. It wasn't a
Absolutely.
Sort of standard high street, alphabetized.
Exactly. It was just kind of like it was a Pandora's box of a bookshop. So you'd walk in and you'd have these old wooden bookcases, and it didn't really make sense, the order. And because the Christina Foyle, who owned the bookshop at the time, she didn't think that there were going to be credit card machines were going to last. So you had this sort of really weird ticketing system of you would collect a book from one place and pay for it sort of four floors down, and in between you would just come across all these magnificent books. So I got really lost in there as a child, and it really allowed my reading to grow in a way that nothing else really had. It really is where my love of bookshops really comes from. And then having owned a bookshop in Berlin, bookshelves and bookcases and that, how you display books and then how you go back to books, is something really important to me.
And where does it live, if I can ask? Is it, because it's quite, I'm imagining quite a sizable bookcase.
So what happened was that Foyles then closed for a big refurbishment a few years ago. It was before I moved to Berlin. So I think it was like 2000, let's say it was 2006. So they had a refurbishment, not the recent one, the one before. So they had a refurbishment, and I had worked in Foyles when I was 18. I ran the Black literature section, which now thankfully is integrated into other types of literature. And I went back and I saw my old boss Jasper, who was wonderful. And then I said, "What are you doing with the bookshelves?" And he was just like, "Do you want one?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. I'd love to have a bookshelf from Foyles." So I took this bookcase. It's a case, it's not a shelf. I put the bookcase on the 38 bus. Okay. And it was when the buses were the old route masters. I wasn't thinking. I just got in there to buy a book, and then I sort of came out with this case, and then I took it on the 38 bus to Hackney, where I was living at the time. And it was just so inconvenient and so annoying, and the bus conductor was just like, "What is this?" And I was like, "It's a bookcase. You should be happy. I'm reading."
How big is it?
It's huge. It's like a proper, it can like, hold, it
like
can hold like
foot.
200 books. Yeah, it's bigger than me, and it's wider than me. And
in some, and because I'm I had impressed it, you dragged that onto a route master.
I just was like, well, what else? I mean, I needed it, right? So then I took it. Then it moved with me. I lived opposite the British Museum for a while, and I basically carried this bookcase around with me for years. And I moved it to Berlin, and now it's in our flat in Herne Hill, and it's just like this bookcase. And it's so important to me, because I just always think all of these people that would have used it to buy books that are in their house, and now I have the bookcase, and I'm like super sentimental about things like that. You know, books, I am very sentimental about. So that's
well, and I wonder, it's interesting. I mean, do you think that Elizabeth, there is a, and we'll probably come onto this when we talk about some of the other objects, but there is that feeling, or maybe it's an actual measurable thing, that the objects kind of get imbued, don't they, with those experiences, whether it's the knowledge, the learning that was in the books that sat on the shelves, or as you say, Charmaine, the people going there, lifting books on and off. It's funny, isn't it, that you... Do you think we invest objects with a meaning that they don't have? Or do you think they... Can you feel it? Can you tell that something has that background?
Yeah, I think you can feel it. And it's why I love secondhand bookshops and can while away many happy hours looking at dedications. I'm obsessed with dedications in secondhand books. And also old postcards that you sometimes find in charity shops. And the sort of beauty of someone loving someone so much that they send them a tender postcard or buy them a book that they've really thought about. And then the tragedy of this book or postcard ending up in a secondhand shop and being picked up by someone else is just what life's all about, really. And I do think, I always remember when I was growing up, my sister, whenever she got a new book, used to smell the pages before she started to read it, which I always thought was a bit weird, but now I totally get it. I think books have smells that are redolent of past lives. And it's why I'm a massive proponent of print generally, because I think the tactility of the physical object is incredibly important to me as part of my reading process.
Definitely. Well, you're in good company here. We're committed analogue enthusiasts and we love all things print. Let's talk about, though, your old object. I see it before us. It looks a very beautiful thing. Can you describe it? Describe it for the listeners, first of all, if you can.
Yes. This is my grandfather's cigarette case. So it is the kind of thing you would see in a 1940s black and white film. It's a sort of burnished silvery colour. It's rectangular in shape and it's got this really beautiful smooth spring mechanism. And I just press the button and it springs open. And inside it's engraved with my grandfather's initials, WH. He was called William Harpham. And it also has a place, Cairo, and a date, 1940 to 1944.
Wow.
And I take this cigarette case everywhere I go. And it is on my bedside
table
at night.
Does it contain cigarettes, may I ask?
It doesn't.
I don't want to pry.
No, you can pry away. I am not
business
a smoker.
Business cards? Is it just empty? It's just
empty, which is rather... Well, I think it's too thin for modern day cigarettes.
I was going to say, it doesn't look like you could fit modern day cigarettes in it. And you're sort of wondering what their cigarettes must... I mean, as elegant as the cases, their cigarettes must have been very
tiny.
Elegant as well.
Yes. Yeah. So my grandfather was a really formative influence for me. His name was William Harpham. He was born in Grimsby. He was the son of a policeman. And he managed to make his way through his sheer kind of native wit to grammar school and then on to Cambridge, where he won a scholarship and he studied modern languages. And then he joined the diplomatic service and he was posted to the League of Nations after the First World War. And the League of Nations was based in Geneva. And it was there that he met the woman who was to become my grandmother, who was Swiss. And he met her on a date where he was meant to be set up with her sister, but actually liked the look of my grandmother instead. And then when the Second World War broke out, they knew that they liked each other, but nothing had ever really been said. And I think my grandfather at the time was engaged to a different woman. And because he'd met my grandmother, he broke that off. And they then conducted their relationship via telegram and letter across occupied Europe. My grandmother from rural Switzerland and my grandfather wherever he was posted. He ended up proposing to her via telegram and she accepted.
Are you sure this wasn't actually like from Evelyn Waugh or Graham Greene or something?
Isn't
That's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like reality at all. It's amazing.
I always wondered about that, but actually when my grandmother died very sadly a few years ago, we found all the letters and it was exactly as the story had been told to us. And there was one particular element of the story that I loved, which was my grandfather designing his ideal engagement ring and my grandmother doing the same and the letters crossing and it was the same ring.
Oh my gosh.
Designed.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not buying. This is definitely from a novel. Maybe unpublished, but it's definitely
from a novel.
And then
it gets better. Is that so having sort of accepted my grandfather's proposal, my grandmother then engaged in an incredibly perilous journey across occupied Europe and met him in Cairo, where they got married.
Where else could it
Where they
be?
Got married in 1944. So that's why the cigarette case is incredibly special to me, not only as a memory of my beloved grandparents, who were really amazing people, but also as a reminder of the power of story and love.
I almost feel like we should wrap up the programme immediately.
I know,
on that note. But continue we shall. That's a very beautiful story. That's
so
right up there.
Beautiful.
On the something olds, I think.
Totally.
That we've ever had. Shall we talk something new as well? Now we've done the olds. Charmaine, we'll come back to you. I like how sort of unashamedly old school even the new items are. What's your new item?
Well, my new item is a watch. It was a gift from my husband, and I'm really fussy about things, because I just really love the things that I love, and my taste, you know, I think that I've got really good taste, as in my taste suits me. I mean, I know that's kind of obvious, but it's like, it means that it's quite hard to find things that I really like. And so I've always wanted a watch. I've always really wanted to have a good timepiece, but I could never, ever find one. And then I found what I thought was one, and then my husband found something similar and bought it for me. It's gold and it has a blue strap, and it's by a company called Instrument in Glasgow. And I had lived in Edinburgh, and my great grandfather is Scottish, and so great great grandfather, I think it's like three generations removed, and he went to Jamaica via Cuba and met an Indian woman, and that's how my family are Jamaican, Indian, Scottish with a bit of German. And so I lived in Edinburgh and did bizarrely an Erasmus year there, although I'm from England and was in a British university that I still managed to do an Erasmus year.
Hashtag IndieRef2.
Or not. So Scotland is really, really important to me. So there's not many things that I, you know, being a black woman from South London with Jamaican, then it's not something that's sort of obvious, but it actually, you know, my surname before I got married was Reed. My other surname is Parchment. So you can see how I had no choice but to get into books. And so before I became Lovegrove when I got married. And, you know, Scotland is so important to me. And so to have this watch, which is kind of Scandinavian, Japanese designed watch, handcrafted in Glasgow by this company who are called Instrument, which it's just all the whole thing makes utter sense to me, and it's really, really, really beautiful. Anyway, my watch was in my bag last week and it was stolen.
Oh no, because I was about to say, I don't see it on your wrist.
Yeah, where is the watch? And it was a limited edition watch. So I'm like utterly devastated, because it was such a kind of mark of my adult life, with references to all the things that I'm interested in, like Scandinavian Japanese design.
Let's repurpose Culture with Robert Bound, with Tom Edwards, for this week as some sort of rudimentary lost and found facility.
This is so sad.
It's a call out, but maybe it's going on another extraordinary journey.
I hope it'll come back
to you somehow.
But what's really nice is that I called the people at Instrument and they were really amazing. When I phoned them in Glasgow, I spoke to this guy called Jamie, and you know, he just described like the entire process of like how they make these watches, like just, and I just felt like, this is, as someone that comes from a book background and a publishing background of stories, that, you know, sometimes we can be quite insular within the publishing industry and that we just think about publishing. But what I love and what I feel like I bring to the industry is actually like a knowledge and culture of other things. And so things like this watch, which encapsulate to me all of the design elements that I'm really interested in, it also encapsulates a kind of a real need for us to think about things differently and to not forget the past and to be analog and to be respectful of craftsmanship and, you know, in thinking about Britain, thinking about Europe and how all of those things can combine. And it sounds probably odd that can come from a watch, but it also to me is really, it's indicative of the fact that as I've been really angry by being called like an urban metropolitan elite, you know, and I'm like, but actually in supporting companies like that and in making sure that we are doing things in a more sort of simplified, grounded way that hark back to our own personal history, but also look forward, then, you know, I was really proud of wearing this watch. Anyway, I'm going to get a replacement. They were amazing. Jamie was really great. And they're going to replace this limited edition for me, which I'm so grateful for. But it was, you know, it was a real gift from my husband, and you know, he really was so thoughtful and he just got it so right. And whenever I wear it, I feel like, you know, being Jamaican, I'm in London, you know, I'm quite late for things. And it's helped me. And when I was in Germany, it really helped to be on time. So for me, it's like, yeah, I've been really late for things since I haven't had it, so I've really missed it. But yeah, so it's going to be my something old new.
I very much like that. Well, I don't like the story. I still hope there's a happy ending to that.
I wonder whether
the original timepiece may, as I say, be on a journey and could find its way back.
I hope so.
Elizabeth, what's the new thing you have? Again, it's before you, luckily.
No
malfeasance involved in this story.
Well, I need to travel with it. So first of all, I just want to say I'm so hypnotised by Charmaine's voice and storytelling that it's like if you decided to become a dictator, I would be a willing acolyte.
Yeah, it's another first.
Do you know what? Anything could happen. The way we're going.
Political uncertainty.
Absolutely.
Okay, so my something new, as you rightly point out, Tom, is also something old in that it is a paper diary. So I am one of those untrendy people. I don't trust my phone to keep track of all my appointments, so I have to actually write it down physically with a pen. But this is a special diary that I found in a local shop around the corner from where I live in Kentish Town. And the shop's amazing. It's called Lost and Found, and it's really beautiful. It's got lovely Scandinavian crafts and all that sort of stuff. And it also had this diary, which is called, rather than an appointments diary, it's called the Perpetual Disappointments Diary.
And I think that is also what my diary is. But that's another story. Please go on.
It is so brilliant because as well as having just the normal day-by-day thing where I can write my appointments like 11 a.m. Monocle radio interview, it has uninspiring quotes every week. So, for instance, every action has a sarcastic and unhelpful reaction.
And so on and so forth, yeah.
For February, a watched pot eventually boils over as you stare vacantly at the tiny bubbles.
Is it more effective as a call to action to respond to something disappointing than something that's supposedly very aspirational? And
that's an incredibly profound question.
No, do you know what I mean? If you were confronted with, you know, even the longest journey starts with a single step, would you just be like, oh, forget it? Whereas if it's something like that, are you more likely to be like, right, today's the day?
Well, in fact, they even have like even the longest journey starts with a single step and then becomes a relentless, meaningless trudge. they even have that. I think it's a really interesting question because when I started using this diary in January, part of me was like, is it going to be slightly depressing and shouldn't I own my own positive space? And do I actually
say, shouldn't I own my own perpetual disappointments?
Yeah.
But that's it. Again, another story.
But then as it went on, it makes me laugh, which I think is just the best quality of any object you can ever have. And I quite like it because I think we do live in a society which can be very self-help driven. Mm. And whilst that has its place, the flip side of that, when it goes too far, is that it becomes about egotism and narcissism. And this is just a timely reminder that there are sort of brilliant, funny, absurd takes on the world. And then the other things I like at the end, you know, when most diaries have kind of pages that you can fill with your own notes. So they've actually titled them. So there's one which is Notes Toward a Laboured Poem. Notes Toward a Tweet Everyone Will Ignore. Right. People Who Never Call. Like, The Gaping Void Ahead, Next Year Planner. So yeah, I enjoy it very much and I carry it around with me everywhere I go.
And what kind of diary keeper are you? Because I get a lot of abuse here in the office because I'm an inveterate doodler, also an obliterator of appointments or things achieved. So it does look a bit like it's got a schizophrenic quality about it.
That just sounds crazy.
But I like to cross things out quite
That sounds like The Murderer in Seven.
That has been pointed out before.
My business partner at Dialogue Scouting, Toby Coventry, does the best notes. Like, his notebook is the neatest thing I've ever seen. And sometimes when we're sitting, you know, we're often sitting next to each other in client meetings, and I'm just, you know, I just write and
ashamed
I listen
by
and
the
write.
Scroll.
Yeah. And And then I'll sometimes get home and I'll be like, Toby's handwriting is so neat. And I just don't understand how he knew what they were going to say, that he already kind of has sort of invisible boxes. And then he sort of neatly puts, you know, and
it's
just
a mystery.
Like,
it's a mystery to me.
And I just, like, I don't understand how you're able to do that. But actually, I'm a really optimistic person on a day-to-day basis. So like when the election was going to happen, then I got so many text messages on the 8th of June saying, oh God, it's going to be all doom and gloom. And I'm like, No. I mean, change is change. And I'm really into change. So I actually would really like this diary for Christmas.
okay, there
anyone?
We go.
Noted, Thomas.
Lost and found and future gift giving.
Because I am so optimistic that I think it would just really make me laugh. because, I mean, it's really impossible for me to think doom and gloom about anything. I can always find something positive.
I like it. And Elizabeth, do you write in this with the same pen? Is it the same handwriting? Mine's all different kinds of pens, biro, fountain pen. I write in capitals quite often, yeah. But then in some sort of weird joined up.
We sound quite similar.
It looks fairly neat, no?
I am quite neat generally as a person. But so I use lots of different pens, whichever pens are to hand. I have different uses of capitals and asterisks. So for instance, this is a fairly typical page here. When it's someone's birthday, I put their name in capital letters in the top right-hand corner. when I've got a deadline to meet, I'll put the publication name in an asterisk.
That's good. And
then it's just a jamboree and a free-for-all and lists, endless lists in kind of shorthand and stuff. But I'm relatively neat. I'm not like you. I don't kind of rub stuff out when I've done it.
I'm not like you. I'm not really messy.
or like a serial
crazy.
Killer.
Yeah.
But also, I think the other thing I like
Although
about...
neatness is a bit of like serial killer trait.
Yeah, it is a bit. As exactly. is writing in capitals all the time. Anyway, moving swiftly on. I like not rubbing things out because I like having records of what I've done. Because I've had a paper diary appointment for years.
Should you find yourself in court, for example?
Exactly.
No, I was here then.
Sounding more and more like a serial killer.
That's why I'm obliterating these things. There's no evidence of where I was at any given occasion. What wonderful things. I feel quite inspired by our discussions today. Are these like sort of desert island disc items? If you could only take one thing, do you think you'd have to take your grandfather's cigarette case with you?
Between these two, I'd definitely take my grandfather's cigarette case. But if I were actually on a desert island, I've thought about this a lot. I think I would take a beautiful pen and an endless supply of high quality paper.
That's pretty good. That would definitely help.
Really
that gets
is
the house
a writer, isn't she?
That's very.
I mean, I would.
It's very edifying, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, I would take a book. I would take a
you
book.
You get that anyway.
I wouldn't take the bookcase. Obviously.
Oh, surely that would be the very thing to take. Or you could try and fashion one yourself.
Yeah, I would try and make out of bamboo. That will be what I'm. You know, when they're trying to rescue everyone, I'm like, I'm still trying to make the bookcase. But no, I would definitely take my watch. I would definitely take my watch. So I knew what time it was in the other world where I'm not, and I wouldn't change it because I wouldn't know what time it was in. Wherever I am on
this
desert island.
This is so profound now that I've kind of lost track of reality. Amazing stuff. And did you notice there was all these themes? We had lost and found and these interesting journeys through the collective heritage.
That's what book people do,
amazing.
You know? Yeah. Everything has a story. You know, we do look for stories in everything. And actually, if there isn't, because we can be interested in so many things, and if there isn't a story, then I think it's always a bit sad.
Well, also, I just think literature and life is about connection. So E.M. Forster famously said, only connect. And it is about finding the fellow feeling and what you have in common and relating to something and understanding what makes us all human. That's why I write books.
I think
And that's why I read.
Charmaine.
What a beautiful moment. Yet another one. I could have wrapped up the show on about 18 different occasions, but that is the one we'll choose to wrap things up. It does bring us to the end of today's programme. Thanks to my guests, to Elizabeth Day and to Charmaine Lovegrove. Elizabeth's new novel, The Party, is out on the 13th of July, published by Fourth Estate. And look out for books being released by Charmaine's new venture, Dialogue Books, in the not-too-distant future, Charmaine?
So on the 10th of July, and I'll be in Little Brown at Carmelite House, and I'll be looking for books on diversity, so in it will be LGBTQI+, BAME, and I'm open for submissions.
There you go.
Well.
A call to action.
Absolutely.
Really to end the show this time. You've been listening to Culture. Our producer was Holly Fisher. Join, well, probably Rob. Let's hope if he returns next week. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks very much for tuning in.